Support for this podcast comes from Atlantic.net, a hosting solution provider of healthcare HIPAA, PCI compliance, and ad tech. If you are feeling the pain of having outdated technology, call Atlantic.net and get the latest security firewall, intrusion detection, backup, disaster recovery, and virtualization. Whether you're starting fresh or need a new provider, Atlantic.net can help you succeed with fully audited solutions and 23 years of experience. Visit Atlantic.net to learn more.
Blog Talk Radio.
Leading Edge Parenting is another fine show brought to you through Law of Attraction Radio Network. Are you ready to find your true parenting power? Join us as we expand our understanding of creating outrageous joy and experience life with our most precious assets, our children, all through the Leading Edge Parenting Show with Sandy Swartz.
And welcome, everybody. Hello there, parents, grandparents, educators, and people around the world who are tuning in to Leading Edge Parenting, because you are ready to be part of this great shift that is being created, a shift in the way grown-ups understand, think about, and relate to the children who are in their lives. We are all part of this evolving consciousness where we now know there is more to childhood than eating their vegetables and keeping their rooms clean and memorizing facts and getting good grades. There is more to our children, and the conscious grown-ups are the ones who are saying, okay, how am I part of this shift? I love these kids. I care about their growing hearts and minds and souls, and I want to be the kind of adult who is supporting this growing child who is in my world. And so I am so excited and happy to bring our program to you today, because my guest on the show is Linda Lantieri. And Linda and I started our teaching careers together so many years ago. I almost don't want to tell you when, but it was back in the late 60s. And we were very young, enthusiastic, idealistic teachers. And I am proud and excited to say we still are all these years later. And so it's going to be one fabulous show, and we are going to help you. And Linda has written a fabulous book that helps grown-ups understand how they can support the inner lives, the inner spirit of the children who they love. And so after a very quick commercial break, we're going to be right back, and I'm going to introduce Linda and her work to you. So hang in there with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at loaradionetwork.com.
Do you know that it is completely in your power to be the parent that you so want to be? And it is my passion to help you. Check out my Leading Edge Parenting website, because there's some great CDs there for parents and grandparents just like you. Topics such as tantrums, why do they have them, and how to stop them. Discipline, what kind of discipline really works, and how to be the empowered parent that you want to be. Once you start changing your reactions with my guidance, you will see so much more cooperation. Just contact me at www.leadingedgeparenting.com. And welcome back, everybody. It is a delight for me to greet today on Leading Edge Parenting Linda Lantieri. Linda is an internationally known expert in social and emotional learning, in conflict resolution, and crisis intervention, with 40 years of experience in the field of education. Linda is the director of the Inner Resilience Program, and a founding member of the Collaborative for Academic, social and emotional learning. She is also co-founder of the Resolving Conflict Creatively program, which is a social and emotional learning program that has already been implemented at 400 schools in 15 school districts in the United States, with pilot sites in Brazil and in Puerto Rico. Linda has co-authored, she has published and edited several books. Waging Peace in Our Schools is one of them. Schools with Spirit, Nurturing the Inner Lives of Children and Teachers, one of my favorites. And she was also a contributor to the book Forever After, New York City Teachers on 9/11. Linda has worked and collaborated with Daniel Coleman, who is the author of Emotional Intelligence, and Working with Emotional Intelligence, and a new book called Social Intelligence. So together, Linda and Daniel are rocking our world in understanding who our children are. And so without further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome Linda to our show today. Hi, Linda.
Hello. A pleasure to be with you, Sandy.
This is
so many years later.
This is great. And I just want to tell the audience something that I remember about you, Linda. And I haven't told you this, but I've been holding it in my heart. And that is, when you and I were brand new teachers, you taught the older kids in the school. And I taught the little ones. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah. And I remember that from the very beginning, you were always interested in the inner lives of your students. From the very beginning, you and I taught in East Harlem in New York City. And so for people who don't live in New York, you know, this was a group of kids who were dealing with a lot of issues in their lives. And they brought a lot of their issues to school. And I remember that Linda, from very beginning, knew that there was more to education than just getting kids to memorize, regurgitate back facts, sit down, behave themselves, and do what the teacher said. From the beginning, you were always concerned with what was going on inside those children and how to teach them to handle their feelings. So it's been over 40 years that you've been working on this.
Yes. Well, first of all, I remember you as well, and I always felt that what young people experienced in kindergarten is what we should keep on doing with young people. And so, without a question, this thread that you describe has continued with me really over the 40 years in a variety of different capacities. I still feel that the vision of education that we currently have today, and you and I experienced back then in the late 60s, is one that still narrows our view of what it means to be an educated person, and clearly that young people need some of the skills that we're talking about here today equally, and if not more importantly, than the skills they're also learning as part of their school experience, without a question.
And isn't it true, Linda, that there is a lot of pressure today? I know in the schools there's so much pressure that the children must score on standardized tests, and that it seems to me, I don't know what your experience is, that so many of the politicians are putting the pressure on the superintendents of schools, who are putting the pressure on the principals, who are putting the pressure on the teachers, and of course the pressure then goes on to the students and the parents, that it's all about getting a grade. And for me, sometimes my heart aches that we're forgetting about who these children are as human beings. And you're driving it home in your book over and over again that they have an inner life, and that it is so important that we nurture the inner lives of these children, because when you graduate and you're dealing with real life, it's not about memorizing a fact, it's about who you've become as a human being. And
exactly.
Yes. So why don't you tell the audience in your own words what your work is about and what it is you're striving to accomplish?
Well, first of all, I think your description of what we're experiencing is true not only in our country but the world, that we clearly are equating better test scores and grades to the idea that kids are ready to be the leaders of the 21st century and have all the skills they need to do that. And unfortunately, I think it's quite a myth that that is the case, because when we begin to talk to both world leaders as well as business leaders, we find that the very skills that kids need are far beyond the kinds of skills that we currently feel are tested for on a standardized test of any kind or a grade point average. And it's really important for children to be handling their inner world and relationships. And we are finding out more and more that when we pay attention to their social and emotional and inner lives, it makes a huge difference in children's lives, I'm happy to say, including how they do on those standardized tests. Because I think we now have a real answer to the question, does this sort of attention to young people's social and emotional development pay off? And I think we know now there's a definitive yes to that, that there are hundreds of studies that compare children who have been exposed to being taught social and emotional learning skills in their home as well as in their school, and we see that the data is impressive in terms of improvement, not only in the kind of people kids are, in their behavior and in and out of the classroom, but they've mastered abilities that also then affect the scores on their academic achievement tests.
So I just have a question for you, Linda, and you may not even be able to answer this, but I hear even the president of the United States still falling into the fear that what our work is in the schools is to keep up mathematically, scientifically with the kids who are in Japan and China and India, and that's what our education is all about. Why are we still going down that route when you know, I know, it's the truth that that is not what it's all about necessarily. Is it just to fall into fear?
It's a great question, Sandy, a great question. And I wonder about it myself. I think that the word needs to get out to the wider public what skills kids really need to be successful in life and work, and also just why it's so critical that the social and emotional domain, which is highly connected to the academic, is going to be something that could make us be able to compete with the various countries at the other level as well. Because when children handle their inner world and relationships, we're really learning the impact that that has, particularly on the brain. That's most shaped by the experience during childhood. You know, it's that executive center of the brain that is the area that holds the circuits for learning to really take place in a way we need it to take place. And what a lot of people don't realize is that when those circuits are inhibited by kids who are not able to control their emotions or pay attention because they are not able to calm and focus, then they don't have the strategies to decrease the very anxiety that they have about performing academically. But also what's tricky is that if we don't pay attention to their social and emotional development, then the child has less attention available to them to learn to solve those problems and grasp new ideas. You know, when a kid gets panicked on a standardized test, he's actually going to imprint that response rather than the details of the material on the quiz. So as Daniel Goleman so beautifully said in my book, distress kills learning. But now we know that we can help kids improve attention and memory along with freeing their mind from that impulsivity if we teach to those things.
So why don't we take a look then, Linda, at, because the people who are listening to this show are the people who want to do something. They're the parents, they're the educators who want to get in there and make a change. Can you explain to them where their power is so that they can, yeah.
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, good parents are like good teachers, right? The most important thing as we raise our children is to offer that secure base, those caring adults in children's lives, to create an environment that lets children be the best they can be. And that base comes from that safe haven, that zone of strength for me, that they can venture forth. And so we need to provide that for kids in our homes, in our schools, and young people can then internalize that base and be able to have the ability to reach the kind of learning they need to reach. But then I think we need to be able to teach young people some concrete skills in what I would call the social and emotional domain, and that they can master those skills and they could be able to be more able to learn the academics as well as be able to function in both their life experience and their eventual work experience. So, for example,
I was just going to say, so do you think all children are capable of this, of learning?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, our emotional intelligence is something that we're not born with. We have the capacity to be able to manage our emotions, be more self-aware, be able to make responsible decisions. But I think that the more we feed those neural circuits that encourage that, the better off young people are and we are. So our emotional intelligence can grow at any time of our lives, and that is happening with teachers and parents as they're learning about it themselves. But the good news is that we have a real window of opportunity for young people, because it's the very part of the brain that does the most developing, that part of the brain that helps you inhibit those emotional impulses and pay attention. These are forming from, you know, early on till mid to late adolescence. So that prefrontal cortex really needs a lot of help from the adults around that child.
Okay, so for the parents who are listening, it doesn't matter how old the child is, you're going to explain some of the things that are in your book that maybe, or tell the parents what's there so that they can start consciously doing these things and teaching these skills to the kids and that they'll grow along with the child as they do this.
Absolutely. So first of all, you know, I think that the biggest thing is that we think that we as parents and teachers, we could tell children to basically calm down or pay attention, and they will and they can. But the natural course of a child's development means that this brain circuitry for calming and focusing is a work in progress, and it needs to be taught and helped. And these neural systems are still growing. So we can be able to, along with our children, have some systemic ways in which we can strengthen those capacities. And what I talk about in my most recent book is a way for both children and teachers to begin to do that, to begin to develop those capacities that help young people inhibit those emotional impulses, those bursts of energy that get them into trouble, not the good ones, and the ability to really be able to focus and pay attention. And we do that through helping young people quiet their minds and calm their bodies in some exercises that I talk about in Building Emotional Intelligence. And actually, there's a CD that is accompanying the book that helps parents or teachers actually use it depending on the age of the child. So it's the developmentally appropriate CD.
Okay, so, and I have the book, and I listened to the CD, and it was very, very helpful, because basically what you're doing there is you're helping the child get in touch with their body and get in touch with
Absolutely.
The feelings and the parts of their body that get tense, that take in those intense feelings, and helping them realize that they actually can soothe their body. And then it's also about their mind, because stuff's also going on inside one's mind. So it's about mm-hmm. focusing one's mind and being very aware that you actually can I don't want to say control, but that you can support your own focus and your own attention. And so it's really teaching them about their mind and about their body. And I have to say that as I was listening it to myself, I was experiencing it not as an outside person just studying what was going on, but I was going mm-hmm. through it and feeling, yes, my own body was starting to relax. And yes, I could feel my own attention. So I want the parents and the teachers to know this is good for us too. We need this stuff as well.
Absolutely. So basically what starts to happen when we help young people experiencing this quieting of the mind and the calming of the body is I like to think that it sort of puts some deposits in the bank in our mind that is that place that is able to be relaxed and focused. And it's actually what is actually happening as well in terms of the neural pathways that strengthen that place in us that helps us be calm and focused. So every time we experience something like that in a exercise, for example, that we might help a young person experience or even experience ourselves, we're actually strengthening the neural pathways in our own brains that tell us this is what it feels like to be calm, focused, and relaxed. And so we're kind of putting deposits in. We may feel wonderful during an exercise, but I've had lots of parents say that, they were helping their kids with math and the child was getting very frustrated and upset and really felt like they were not getting anywhere with what they thought they had solved. And I remember a parent saying to me, she took out the CD, she said, let's take a moment to relax, and sure enough, they did the CD, which lasted about 7 or 8 minutes because it was a young child. And right afterwards, the child started to be able to get the right answers on the math quiz. Now, the interesting thing about that is it has a lot to do with the fact that he was able to focus his attention in that way and therefore access his short-term and long-term memory because his mind was still in that state of relaxed alertness that he experienced during the exercise. So that's what we're talking about. The interesting thing that I find is that young people here in New York City and other places that are using some of this in their classrooms find that when they help young people experience some kind of mindfulness practice before they actually take a standardized test, kids are in a much better frame of mind to be able to access what they already know. So it's helping them with the academics as well.
I can only tell you my own personal experience, and that is that when I'm writing a book and sometimes I get stuck, or I'm mm-hmm. working on a paper and I feel like my thoughts are getting jumbled and I'm not clear, I will say to myself, you need to go relax your brain, Sandy. And I will put on soft music and I will do, it's like a meditation. All it really is just relaxing my brain and refocusing my attention away from the stuff that's confusing me. And it's like a miracle. And as I'm listening to you, Linda, now I'm understanding what my brain is doing during that time, is that I think I'm letting my circuits clear and kind of find themselves again. And the amazing thing that happens for me is when I come out of it 10 minutes later, I'm clear-minded. The thoughts start flowing again. And it isn't that I had a stroke of genius. I think it's that my brain went through some kind of an exercise where those neural pathways cleared up. And so how wonderful if we could do this for children and let them learn how to do this for themselves.
Oh. Well, absolutely. And also that we know that this is the case, that the prefrontal cortex, that brain's executive center, holds the circuits both for inhibiting disruptive emotional responses and anxiety and for paying attention. So if we're having those feelings of anxiety or disrupting emotions that overtake us, then there's very little ability on the part of our brain to be able to allow ourselves to pay attention. And focusing and paying attention is the key skill needed to access the part of our brain we need for any learning to take place, which is the memory center of the brain. So when kids are flooded with those feelings and are not able to actually change their own physiology, first of all, be aware that that's happening, and being aware that, as you were, that you needed to stop and get to that calmer place, and then be able to know how to change their physiology is the other, I think, important thing that we're beginning to teach kids, that this is in their control. It's not that they are out of control of that.
So how do you go about doing this, Linda? What parent listening today, what would you recommend, or teacher listening today?
Well, one of the things I would recommend is to work with this book, Building Emotional Intelligence, because what it basically does is begin to give you some ideas about what to do with young people that will help them start to focus on being able to have the experience of listening to the CD that is already developmentally prepared for your child, whether it's a classroom of kids or whether it's your own child that you're doing this with. So one of the things the book actually does is it's divided into sections where a teacher or a parent can begin first to get kids ready. We call it setting the stage, where they might talk a little bit about the fact that they're taking this quiet time together with in the classroom, or it's with your child at home, and that you'd like to begin this time in a special way, and we really recommend that you use something like a chime where kids are listening to it as it fades, and then that you help the child begin to have an experience of beginning to calm down. And there are lots of different examples in the book, you know, from young kids where we take them on an imaginary journey and pretending that they're climbing a big mountain and they're beginning to feel their breathing, to other examples of ways in which we get kids sort of ready to experience the CD. And then we do the CD with the child. And as I said, it's exercises that focus on different ages so that it's easy for any parent or adult to begin to incorporate this into their own lives, whether it's the life of the classroom or their home lives. And then right afterwards, it's great to have a reflection time with your child. You know, in a classroom that might take the avenue of a log or a diary. It may be just a discussion you have with your child. But what's also special is that whether it's the classroom or the home, you're taking that special time of quiet, of allowing the child to just catch up with him or herself. Parker Palmer said something once. He's a wonderful educator who's done a lot with nurturing the inner lives of children and teachers. He said that we ought to always have enough time in the day that we have the time that we can talk to ourselves and then listen. And so this is really providing that kind of stop time that we're able to go within.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying to parents and teachers is, one, we have to really value this and honor this and realize how important this is so that we will make time in our day for it. Because if we just listen to this radio show and we go, that makes sense, but then we drop it and we don't actually find a way to weave it into our day, then it's just a thought that gets lost in space. It sounds to me like I know again for myself, I know that when I sit quietly and I put on soft music and I meditate or I reflect quietly, I feel so much better, and everything in my day feels better. But there are still days when I tell myself I don't have time to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing phenomenon that even though I know it's wonderful and it works, I still sometimes don't give myself the time. So it's human, but I want to encourage anybody who's listening to this program to value yourself and the children enough to know that this is going to make a real difference in your child's life. And as from a parent or a teacher point of view, as Linda said, academically we'll probably see eventually that it's going to make a very big difference for your child in the way they do in their schoolwork. Once they're
absolutely
once this is, So Linda, you have in your book can I just ask you just to tell something to the parents, the teachers listening, because I remember you had this way back in the 60s. You say create a peace corner. Mm. And I remember when you did this way back then. Can you, I used to marvel at that. Here we were in the middle of Harlem. The kids were, some of the kids were running through the hallways crazy, you know, there were all kinds of things. And Linda had a peace corner. I loved it and it worked. So could you just tell, just quickly, the teachers or the parents, if they wanted to create a peace corner in their world with children, how do you go about doing that?
Sure, Sandy. It's interesting how I didn't actually remember it went back that far. And now I get to write about it and tell people about it, and I've just seen so many more peace corners since. I think one little boy in our Vermont site said it well when a newspaper person was coming in to see the program, and he was showing somebody the peace corner, and he said to the person, by the way, he said, this is a good thing if you go to the peace corner. This is not like the cool-off corner, you know. So the first thing I would say about a peace corner, whether it's in the home or in the classroom, is that it's a place that's developed with the whole family or the whole classroom, and it's truly a place that you could go to help self-regulate, not that you're sent to. So that's, I think, the first big thing. The second is, again, it's this opportunity to say, maybe a small area of your home or a small area of your classroom can be a place that represents for you that peacefulness and that calmness. And if that were the case, what might you have in the peace corner? So again, developing it with the children, people have done all kinds of things, from, you know, having clay there to quiet music to the CD for my book, to pictures that are up. Some schools decide, or classrooms decide, that they want to have a self-portrait of each of them in the peace corner. So it varies. And I think the big thing is for a classroom and really for a home as well, we often have something in the peace corner that helps kids keep their own time, so a timer of some kind, and usually it's best to have the sand type timer where kids could turn it over and they know they need to take 5 minutes in the peace corner, or if it really feels like they're not ready yet for learning, they might turn it around one more time. And so it's really to help kids realize that going to a place that we designate in this way could maybe even help them move toward experiencing that self-regulation. That's what it's really about.
So it's not a punishment. It's a place that we go to refresh ourselves and get back to our center.
Exactly. I'm thinking of a third grader in Queens who on Monday morning hung up his coat and went right to the peace corner. And he turned the sand timer twice, which is allowable. And then right afterwards, the class was up to a math lesson. He went right into the math lesson. And about an hour later, the teacher went over to him and said how she had noticed what he had done. And she said she wondered if he'd like to tell her anything about it. And he said that over the weekend, his uncle had died in Nicaragua, and they had come together to see as a family if there was enough money, he said, for at least one person to go to the funeral. And he said, we put all our money in the living room floor, he said, and there was not enough money. He said, so I was with my uncle at his funeral in the Peace Corner.
Whoa.
Now, what was so powerful about that is that, first of all, he knew that these disturbing emotions that he was feeling was going to interrupt his learning. That's first of all. So that's self-awareness, you know, that he realized, I'm thinking of my uncle and I'm not going to be able to do my math. And then he knew that that was a classroom that just honored the inner life in such a way that he wouldn't be seen that he was off task. And then he was able to actually go to the Peace Corner and be able to know how to self-regulate himself and to calm himself and to realize that he could think about this. And then finally, that helped him be able to be right where he was with his math lesson. I mean, that's unbelievable that a kid in third grade is beginning to learn those powers that we all have around our mind, but we're not aware of that.
And what as you're, you know, sharing this story, I'm thinking, as a teacher, you have 30 kids or 35 kids walking into your classroom, each one experiencing life before they got there, and us just expecting and demanding that they drop the rest of their life and just focus on the one lesson that we've deemed is important in that moment. That's like so unrealistic, and yet that's the world we create for children. Same thing at home for parents. We just want the kids to brush their teeth, get dressed, do their homework, do with it. When sometimes they have other things going on, they have a friend who talked about them behind their back, or they're worried that maybe they don't fit in anymore. And so what you described, this Peace Corner, talk about a secure base and a safe haven, and also teaching a child how important it is to honor what's going on inside of them and then giving them a strategy to know what to do with it. It's just huge. That's why I wanted you to share this, because this is the kind of stuff that Linda shares in her book, and this is what we're trying to go, this is the shift we're moving towards. It's not just, what's wrong with you? Clean up your room. Hurry up and do what I say. It's that all of us, all human beings, we're carrying around this inner world, and our brain cannot function to its highest capacity when we're suffering with emotions.
Absolutely. And we also, you know, it's also honoring that, you know, as my goddaughter said to me once, you know, we're human beings, not human doings, you know. It's honoring that it's this balance that we have to keep having with ourselves. You know, we want to be productive and right there for everybody, but, you know, we're just burning ourselves out as adults as well, you know, and then we're doing the same thing to our kids. And what I think we're really saying here is it's got to be both. It's got to be that we give ourselves time to catch up with ourselves, that it gives ourselves time to explore that inner world that we're talking about right now. And that inner world, as it's strengthened, only improves upon and enhances that outer world. That's the thing I think we're saying. And for the fast-pacedness of kids today, it's just very sad how, at first, how uncomfortable kids feel with the silence and the quiet. And then, after a while, they don't want to do without it. You know, they tell their teacher if they're forgetting to do quiet time, as some of them call it. You know, Miss So-and-so, you forgot quiet time today. You know, I hope we have it before the day ends. You know, so they begin to see the value of it and begin to experience the value of it, really.
So one of the things you say in the book, Linda, is it's important to help your child check in with her or his body cues. What do you mean by that? Can you explain that?
Well, you know, we even as adults have such a separation between what's going on in our body and what our body is telling us around anxiety or nervousness or feelings that are emerging and not even being able to notice them or recognize them. So I think what we know from the whole area of stress is that there are things that stress each one of us, and for each kid that's going to be different things that stresses one kid over another kid. But what we can help kids begin to be aware of is that anything that, quote, stresses us has some cues that our body kind of begins to register before we even are aware of it. And so we often help kids to be more aware of that by asking them just to take notice of that, to be aware of their breathing, which is the beginning way to become aware of their bodies. But then to really notice the cues that their body is telling them around what they might be feeling so that they can verbalize those feelings.
So you mean like there's a tightness in your chest or your tummy has a tingle in it, or is that what it is?
Some of that, but also at the very early stages, it's just making kids aware that they could check in with their body, you know. And I think that the easiest way young children in particular could be made aware of that is to allow them to be noticing of their breath in ways that are guided by the adult, as I talk about in the book. And as they begin to notice that breath, the in-breath and the out-breath, and that they sort of take it together with you, they begin to see that as you take deeper breaths and as you relax, when your breath changes, you begin to feel differently. You begin to feel calmer, that these two things are somewhat connected. So that kids begin to use those cues to strengthen sort of their relationship with themselves rather than it sort of taking over for them.
So in the book, you have exercises to calm their body and to help them focus their mind. So those are the two areas that you work on in the book and also on the CD. And you have it set up for children from 5 to 7 years old, and then you have it, it's 8 to 11 years old, and then you have it for the older children. Right, so no matter how old your child is, the parents can follow along in here. So can you give the parents an example of something that you recommend they do in the book or on the CD with their child to help them focus their minds or calm their body? Is there anything a parent could start to do like immediately?
Sure. I think that as we talk about in the book, I think the one easy first experience could be with using a chime of some kind where it's rung and you just ask kids to follow that sound and to raise their hand when they no longer hear that sound, because what you're starting to do is just helping them to realize that our minds can be minds that can focus on something. You can move easily into then just allowing your child to notice their breathing and to put their hands on their abdominal region. And very often we don't realize that sometimes our breathing has changed because of our stress. And when we breathe in, our stomachs actually go in, and the opposite should happen, that when we breathe in, our abdominal area should get bigger. And the reverse is true too. So that we begin to sort of breathe a bit with kids is a good beginning. And then to just let them close their eyes and to begin to be aware of sound. Usually sound is the easiest for kids to tune into. And seeing if they could notice any sounds that they might hear. And then to just open their eyes and ask, what did they hear? You know, that's a good beginning.
Yeah. Actually, it sounds like a good thing for grown-ups to do, too. I mean, what a lovely, relaxing exercise for a grown-up to... I know I have, like, these chimes that ring outside my bedroom when the wind blows, you know, those lovely chimes. And when I focus on them, I feel peaceful just listening to the chimes, because what happens is it takes my attention away from anything else that's causing anxiety or stress, and now I'm just focused on that beautiful sound. And from there, I remind myself that there are sounds all around me that I think it's Eckhart Tolle that talked about in his book that we're not even aware of because our mind is so busy chattering, or the stress is getting our mind so chattering. And so the exercises that you recommend are going to be so wonderful and helpful for the parents as well.
What you're saying, Sandy, is so true, that what we're talking about here today will be and is as valuable for the adults in children's lives as it is for the young people themselves. And we don't have to be experts in doing some of the things that we talked about here today before we actually try it with our kids. I remember a great story from Gandhi's autobiography where a mother wanted to go to Gandhi to help her get her child not eating sugar. And he came one day and he joked with her, and he didn't say anything to her child. And he asked her to come back in 2 weeks. And 2 weeks later, he joked again with the child, but then he gave him a good talking to about the sugar. And she was so puzzled why he didn't do that 2 weeks ago. And he said, because 2 weeks ago, I too was eating sugar. So, you know, the bottom line is we have to just be a little ahead of our kids with this work, and really, really encourage parents to take it slow, as well as teachers, and to allow time to be with your child in a way that's purposeful. And I think this is what we're talking about here. And then our kids will give us the right direction as well of where to go with it, without a question.
This is a wonderful way for parents to get the skills that they've been looking for. Parents and teachers who are listening to the show today, I know many, many times you are asking for help. How do I help my child stay focused? How do I help my child deal with her feelings or his feelings? And I want to say that Linda Lantieri's book, Building Emotional Intelligence, gives you a step-by-step process to help you start this new adventure with your children. And so I want to say it's been my pleasure to have Linda on the show today and for her to give us a piece of the brilliance and the wisdom that she has carried with her for all these years and continues to harness and to share with the world. We want to equip our children with an inner strength so that they can meet the challenges and great opportunities that come their way. And we also want to nurture our own lives so that we can offer these children the kind of support that they need so they can develop their inner strength and they can feel their own inner security. And Linda has put together a process to help parents, teachers, and children. I hope that you take her up on this. I hope that you start listening to soft music, find a place in your home or your classroom to create a peace corner, and to continue to build your child's emotional intelligence. For today, it's Sandy at Leading Edge Parenting saying, I'm so glad you were with us. I wish you a wonderful week. I wish you peace. Listen to those sounds. Listen to those birds. Listen to the beauty that can resonate through our souls. Be there for your kids. Find a little time to calm down and enjoy life. Until next time, it's Sandy at Leading Edge Parenting saying, love you all. Hugs to everybody. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you would like more information on Leading Edge Parenting, go to www.lawofattracttalkradio.com.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Support for this podcast comes from Atlantic.net, a hosting solution provider of healthcare HIPAA, PCI compliance, and ad tech. If you are feeling the pain of having outdated technology, call Atlantic.net and get the latest security firewall, intrusion detection, backup, disaster recovery, and virtualization. Whether you're starting fresh or need a new provider, Atlantic.net can help you succeed with fully audited solutions and 23 years of experience. Visit Atlantic.net to learn more.